Mark Grody and Hub Arkish on 670 The Score.
Hey, hey. Hub and I are here until 9 o'clock tonight. Going to be talking a lot of Bears, of course, because that is what we do. Hub and I cover the Chicago Bears every day. So we're going to bring you Bears. Chris Emma is wandering the hallways of our Score studios at the Mighty Prudential Towers here right now. He covers the Bears for 670thescore.com. He'll join us in a little bit. So we'll be going round and round and round with the three of us at 620. At 720, we're going to have on Mia O'Brien from 1010 XL in Jacksonville. Extra large. She will talk about the Jaguars. Looking forward to that. It seems like they got a lot going on there, too, in terms of trying to get their offense right. And then at 8 o'clock, Trey Wingo will join us. So we got a busy night here on the Score. Hub, how are you, my man? You ran into traffic, didn't you?
I'll tell you what. I love working here. I hate getting here. Yeah. You know, that's the hard part. With all the construction we got going on, and I'm guessing this weekend with the big event and everything, there's a lot of people coming in town already. It's just the traffic is crazy. But being here and being part of the Score is worth it all. So happy to be here. We're going to have fun tonight. And interesting week for the Bears because, you know, until 6 days ago, the Jaguars head coach was probably the leader on the roster right now for first head coach to get fired before Salah.
Yeah, Doug Peterson. Yeah.
Gets one win. Now you remember he was 9-8 his first 2 years. He probably wasn't yet in real serious trouble. But that team is at least a little more messed up than the Bears are right now going into this weekend, although they are coming off their first win, so they feel better about that. And they've played a tougher schedule than the Bears so far. So they're 1-4. It's not equal to the Bears 3-2, but it is understandable a little more that way too. But at the end of the day, their defense has been so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And after the offense, I thought played pretty well last week for the most part. Not great, but pretty well and definitely improved. This could be another week for Caleb to take another step forward. And if they can be 100%, because we were talking about this just before we came on. This is so different from any other game that any of these teams play when you go overseas. There is so much involved. Not that the field is different, not that that it's different, how you're going to run your system or whatever, but the travel, the time, the people there are looking to be involved, you know, all the extra going on. It's not a normal game. And for a very young team with the Bears, you know, like the Bears, who haven't done this, you know, most of this roster, it is very different. And you can't ignore that as you start trying to figure out which way this game is going to go.
Yeah, which is why it was, and I think the approval rating on the Bears leaving on Monday for London is at about 98% yes. Because although I don't think there's anybody left from 2019 when last they went to London, they kind of botched that because they left, I think, on a Thursday. That was the year that I did go with the team. It was a Thursday when we exited for London, and the Bears were pantsed. Well, I guess they weren't pantsed. They actually came back against the Raiders and ended up losing, I think, by three on a late interception by Chase Daniel in that game. But a lot of bad things happened in that game. And John Gruden had his Raiders there on Monday. So it just didn't look good. Even if I don't know if it was causal necessarily. None of us really knows, but it made it look bad that they were there and the Bears weren't.
Yeah, you know, I've broadcast two of the Bears games in London and about half a dozen other games in London for Westwood One. And I can tell you, once you're there and in the press box or on the field or whatever, it's normal football then. It's a little different field, but that doesn't matter. You know, you still play the same. It's everything leading up to the game and even getting back afterwards in your game the next week that has changed so much by the travel, by the time changes, by so many, you know, fans approaching it differently. It's just, it's a very different week for these guys. And for the Bears as one of the youngest teams in the league, they still are one of the youngest. They're not as young as they were before free agency this year. You have to keep that in mind as you try and evaluate this game because most of their players have never been through anything like this with all the extra going on around them before and after the game leading up to the game.
He is Hub Arkish. I am Mark Grody, and you are invited. We are open here. We are opening the phone lines. The text lines are always open, but keep the number handy. 312-644-6767 is the number if you want to talk Bears. Any questions for Hub or me that you'd like to go through, we are game for it. 312-644-6767 to call or to text. And I want to ask this question, and then I will explain myself to everybody. The question I want to ask Bears fans, and you as well, Hub, do you care how the Bears win games? Do you care how the Bears look in the process of winning? Because I do care about how the Bears win, because there have been too many seasons where they won during the regular season, but it was not sustainable because of the way they won, as in it was with mediocre offense, really good defense, a lot of years where you had really good special teams, and ultimately it was not sustainable. I bring this up because I was getting a little bit of pushback when I said that this morning on the Molly and Haw show right here on The Score. A couple of texts, and I wrote one of them down. Grody is wrong. A win is a win, which on the surface I understand. However, again, there have been too many seasons where regular season's wins did not add up because of the way they won, and it was not sustainable. For example, let me just humor me here for a second. Let me give you some examples. In 2018, great year, great regular season for the Bears. Bears were 12-4, but ended up with elite defense and just okay offense with Mitch Trubisky and Allen Robinson essentially as your only real weapon on that team. They go through the regular season. They lose to Philadelphia in the playoffs, the Cody Parkey thing. So they're eliminated immediately. In 2019, they drop off to 8-8, no playoffs. In 2020, that was the year that they lost six in a row, ended up 8-8, and somehow made the playoffs. And that's one of those, like, excuse me years. And everybody knows that 500 teams don't belong in the playoffs. And subsequently, they lost to the New Orleans Saints 21-9 that year in the playoffs because they were not a playoff team. They were not built to win in the postseason. 2021, the Bears were 6-11. 2022, 3-14. We don't have to relive that. The 10-game losing streak. So you completely fell off the table since 2018 because you did not build something sustainable. 2010, the Bears were 11-5. Now, this was a little bit more complicated because it was a good year. That was a good year. The Bears did beat Seattle in the playoffs with Jay Cutler on the team. Then they lose to Green Bay in the NFC title game. But 2011, and I know there was a Jay Cutler injury that year. Bears end up 8-8. No playoffs. 2012, no playoffs. Trestman era. I don't think I need to go through the Trestman era. So again, after winning in 2010, there's this slow or fast decline, if you would like. Couple more here. 2005, the Bears were 11-5. A good regular season. Rex Grossman, your quarterback. And then, I have to remember this one, Hub, the Bears were upset at Soldier Field in the first round of the playoffs by the Carolina Panthers and Steve Smith doing things to the Bears at Soldier Field. 2006, the Bears went to the Super Bowl. They did go to the Super Bowl, and they were beaten by Peyton Manning. So that was a good year. But guess what? Next year, 2007, the Bears were 7-9. So that declined. And then let me go all the way back. This last one, last example I'll throw out there was 2001. That's a Dick Geron year. The Bears were 13-3. Maybe one of my favorite, because I was just a fan then, one of my favorite regular seasons. That was the season where you had the back-to-back pick sixes by Mike Brown in the San Francisco game, and the walk-off wins by Mike Brown, essentially 13-3 record, unbelievable. They get a home playoff game against the Philadelphia Eagles, and then they just get trounced by the Eagles, and then 2 years later, Dick Geron is fired. So when you have these pop-up seasons that come up and they're really good regular seasons, they just haven't been sustainable because of the way the Bears have been built and essentially, without overcomplicating it, a lack of sustainable offense. So to me, I do care the way the Bears win because history will tell you, if you've been watching enough Bears games, you understand what I'm saying. It doesn't work if you don't have the right kind of offense, period.
You just reminded me of something. I hate that Dick Geron got fired because he's one of my favorite people to ever coach the Bears. He wasn't the best coach, but he's one of my favorite
people. Right, yeah. No, I got you. I know. I think you did. Didn't you do the coaches show with Dick Geron
in
the day?
Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah.
But at any rate, Mark, you're absolutely right. I mean, a win is a win. There is no question about that. You want to win 17 games every year. You're not going to, but that's what you want. But that said, it does matter how you win.
Yeah.
And you just gave the reasons why.
Yeah.
Because all of these last four or five Bears playoff teams weren't as good a teams as Bears fans wanted them to be, maybe thought they were, and hoped that they would continue to improve. They weren't ready yet. They weren't that good. And so I will never complain about a win. I mean, you'd much rather, I would much rather win ugly than lose handsome. You know?
100%.
Yeah. So that is clear. But it does matter, you know. And now this weekend, though, when you've got two teams that you're really not sure about, I'm not sure it matters as much because we're still getting to know both these teams, you know, and the win matters. But how they win, just get one this weekend. Just keep piling up some wins. Because I read something this earlier today I wasn't aware of, but I knew how easy the schedule has been so far. I mean, what is it, 3-6 records for their opponents? But coming into the season, they were apparently rated the second easiest schedule in a league. And in the second half of the season, they have the third hardest schedule.
Oh, yeah. That's
based
when
on where they're at right now.
Play the division.
And so they've got to pile up wins right now. It doesn't matter how. Just pile up wins.
Yeah, but at some point in time, it's got to live right, though.
Yeah. Well, and for our evaluation, the reason it's important to me how they win, you know, whether they win or not, that how they do it, is for us to report on this team and to give the right information to the fan base is you have to tell both sides of the story. And that's, you know, that's our job. That's what we do. But at the end of the day, it still gets back to no matter how ugly an ugly win is, it's still a win. And no matter how pretty a pretty loss was, it's still a loss.
Yeah, hey, I like wins for sure. I have loved some of these regular. I had 2018 was my first year full time covering the Bears. I was on the sideline. That was a blast, man. Like that defense was legit elite with some of the stuff that was going with Eddie Jackson and Kyle Fuller, obviously Khalil Mack. I mean, it was just a terrific defense from head to toe, but ultimately it didn't mean a damn thing. So now going through the Bears' wins so far this year, this is what it brings me to. It brings me to 2024, the first game of the season. And look, man, like I've definitely got time for Caleb Williams to develop. That's not the point of all of this. I think it's just my point is in terms of making the Bears a team that can win playoff games instead of just having fun regular seasons. They beat Tennessee in the opening game, but a lot of that was Will Levis being an idiot. And Caleb Williams only threw for 93 yards in that game. They lose to Houston. Caleb gets better in terms of yardage, 174 yards and two interceptions in that game. At the Colts, a loss. So back-to-back losses. That's a game here, and just following along with Caleb Williams, it's like if you just look at the box score, that was where he threw the ball 52 times for 363 yards, but he also turned it over twice, did have two touchdowns. On the overall, it didn't feel like a great game for Caleb Williams that day. They beat the Rams. There's a win. Caleb Williams, that was when they did a lot of the underneath throwing and a little bit more conservative just to kind of get some confidence going. Caleb was 17 of 23 for 157 yards. And that brings me to the game last week against Carolina where we finally saw it. That's the way I want to see the Bears win games. Caleb Williams, 20 of 29, 304 yards, two TDs, not just that, but the explosive plays to DJ Moore, two of them to DJ Moore, one to DeAndre Swift with the catch and run on that one, a 26-yard play to Cole Kmet, which could have been a touchdown if it was placed in the right spot, but I think the wind messed with it a little bit in that case. So I think we have arrived at a point in the season where that's the way I want to see it, but I'm not sure if that was the launching point for Caleb Williams. As a matter of fact, I'm doubtful that's the launch, like he's going to take off and never look back. I think they'll get to that point. I still believe Caleb's going to be great. I don't know that was necessarily it, but that's definitely what I want to see.
I have two things on that. First, yes. Let me answer what you just said. What was the one thing that was different last week?
Explosive plays?
Well, about the team, the players, the roster, a healthy Keenan Allen. And that's why Caleb Williams, I thought, had his best game throwing the ball. That's why they scored their most points. That's why they won the biggest.
Just as a decoy? Because he wasn't involved.
Not just
heavily.
As a decoy, I mean, having all three of them together.
I got you.
When you put all three of them together, they're going to be really tough to cover. And you saw it last week. And then you put in Cole Kmet. I said all three. It's really all four.
Yeah.
And so that was a big part of it.
Gerald Everett, the backup tight end or the other tight end, made a play in that game.
But having a healthy Keenan Allen back and having all three of those wide receivers plus the tight ends plus the running backs, that's when you saw what the offense can be, even with what is still an offensive line not performing up to expectations. But then after that, I think the Bears' second best game was the Texans game. as far as how they played.
Okay.
And they lost that one, and I wasn't happy about it. But, you know, but they played really well, and they played well enough to beat a playoff team. You know, whereas I look at, you know, the other two wins, okay, I'm glad they won them, but they weren't that hard, okay?
Yeah.
So, and we're not going to learn that much more this week. Hopefully they will win, but that's why I think you're absolutely right on what you said so far.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on the – look, like I said, with Carolina, that's the way I want it to look, but you can't not take into consideration how depleted and bad Carolina was because they were depleted, and we were both at the game. It was just like players marching out of that game injured with three or four starters after not having three or four starters to begin the game. They lost another bushel of players as well. So while it was heartening and it looked great and you got to beat the teams on your schedule, and the Bears showed that they're not bad because they beat an awful team, you have to take that into consideration.
I think when you look at the first two wins, the Bears' offense – the players just didn't show what we know they can do. They did enough to win the game. Last week, they showed a fair amount of what they can do. And that, to me, was the obvious difference in that one. And I just hope Keenan Allen can stay healthy. I hope that maybe Odunze is finally healthy, because I'm not sure he's been 100% at any point yet. You know, he had the leg injury early.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. But the other, I'll tell you what I really liked the most. All of the concerns we heard about Caleb Williams in the month leading up to the draft, and then the talk for the first month or so after the draft, have proven to be false. He is everything I would want my future franchise quarterback to be, both off the field so far and on the field. He is young. He has only played four games. It is totally different at this level. Yeah, I haven't seen enough yet to make predictions about where he's going to be in a year or two or three, but everything I've seen so far makes me feel a heck of a lot better about him than I did going into the opening of training camp.
He's been in, like, let's see here. I think I go back, in terms of like covering Bears games in earnest, I go back to Jay Cutler, like just quarterbacks. Jay Cutler, then Mitch Trubisky, Justin Fields, and now Caleb Williams. He is by far, out of that group, the best speaker, the best at answering questions, the best at allowing us to, and this is not something that myself and our colleagues that we can overdo. Caleb Williams is willing to talk to you by his locker. You're not going to get anything great out of him, because like that would probably be unfair to start hammering him with actual questions by his locker, but he's available.
Yeah. You know, I think other than Justin, he's the youngest of those four or five guys you just mentioned. And I think that he is easily, out of all of them at 22, the most mature of the four or five. He is ready to be a leader.
Yeah, you're right.
He acts like a leader.
Yeah.
And that may be the most important thing to think about when you're picking your franchise quarterback. So,
yep.
And now again, there's a lot more left to prove. I may be saying some negative things in a couple of weeks, but for right now, pretty pleased about where he's at.
You put it really well. So far, so good. We got to take a break. When we come back, I see him over there on the other side of the glass. It's 670thescore.com's Chris Emma. So you will have three Bears beat reporters next here on The Score.
Mark Crotty and Hub Arkish on 670 The Score.
To me, that's always what we talk about from the beginning, you know, where we say always a pair and a spare in every position. You know, so the coaches do a great job of getting guys ready to go. At every position, if it's nickel, outside corner, strong safety, free safety, we always have a couple guys ready to go there, because when something like this happens, you're ready. And you're not trying to teach guys things, technique and fundamentals, assignments, all that. They already know that. And our coaches do a really good job with that. And our players do a great job with staying prepared and staying ready. And the guys that get their opportunity, if that is the case, they'll be ready to go.
Man, the Bears head coach, Matt Eberflus, sounds good over the clash. I don't know that I would have put that together, necessarily. London calling. Oh, I get it. The flu sounded good, man. Bears and Jaguars on Sunday, 8:30, Chicago time. Bears 3-2, Jacksonville 1-4. And as the coach was talking about right there, we know that Elijah Hicks will be in for Jaquan Brisker. It's looking a lot like Tyreek Stevenson will not be able to play in this game, officially listed as doubtful, which to me means no. Jalen Jones probably will step in for him, maybe a little Josh Blackwell sprinkled in there as well. So the Bears do have some issues in their secondary. Along with Hub Arkish, I'm Mark Crotty.
Guys, I have a question for you two. What is it with Bears fans that everything that goes right with the Bears is because of the players? And everything that goes wrong is because of the coaches.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know how much you've noticed that you're listening to our work here, but you know, immediately if something goes wrong, oh, blame Flus or blame the offensive
Shane Waldron.
Somebody.
Yeah.
I heard Spiegs and you know, the guys talking
Lawrence,
on the way down.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, you know, Waldron and this whole thing with the first 15 plays or whatever.
Yeah.
Shane Waldron has been an offensive coordinator before. He knows that, okay? That was not reported correctly. I'm not going to say accurately. I don't know because, you know, she's really good.
Stacey Dales.
Yeah, Stacey
NFL
very
Network.
Good.
Yep.
And nothing negative to say about her. But something was wrong with that reporting, and I don't believe that Waldron
You don't believe that he didn't
I don't believe that he didn't have a 15 play
script. The first 15 play. Well, we'll get to ask him.
I don't know if he used it, but I don't believe he didn't have it.
We'll actually get to that here in a couple of minutes with Stacey Dales, as exactly what she was saying. But we do want to welcome into our studio from down the hallway at WBBM, where Chris Emma of 670thescore.com has been doing sports updates at 16 and 46. He now joins us in the studio. What up, Chris?
Boys, thanks for having me. How are we doing?
We're doing well. And yes, Sears, let's find that. Let's find that, because we could start right there. Because you're right, Hub. I mean, like, the second most scrutinized person in the city of Chicago over the last 50 years is the offensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears. Many times justifiably, sometimes maybe unfair. I thought some of it last year with Luke Getsy was a little bit unfair and just easy pickings, you know, just like a perfect, you know, if you're not going to blame the quarterback, you got to blame somebody. It's usually the offensive coordinator. But just for reference now, here was the report from Stacey Dales of the NFL Network on Mully and Haw this morning regarding Shane Waldron and the lack of scripted plays.
One of the things I discovered is they didn't have a first 15. So they were going in with ideas to start their games, but not really having, I mean, the first 15 to 20, Kyle Shanahan goes 25. So that's like, you know, priority calls that you can go to that are so scripted and rehearsed. It's very error-free football. Kevin O'Connell does 20 in Minnesota. Well, they've started now doing a first 15, and I think it has brought the offensive line together with the run game, together with, you know, the cohesiveness with the perimeter game. And now you're seeing a little bit more of, I don't know if you guys would agree, a little bit more polish as we enter week 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just that helps with the decisiveness of the quarterback, who has had to learn the speed of the NFL, which is typical for a rookie, and adjust on the fly with 5 seconds at the line of scrimmage. So I just think dialogue has been such a big part of improvement for Chicago offensively. And gosh, you know, the defense is happy about it.
Yeah. Hub, I will respectfully disagree with you. Like, I do believe the report by Stacey Dales, and I could be proven wrong. I don't know if Shane will answer the question when we ask him if the first 15 plays were scripted, but I can't imagine, because she got this from Mercedes Lewis, and she put him on the record as well. So, you know, then you're calling Mercedes Lewis a liar, or, you know, that.
Yeah, let me be clear. I'm not disagreeing with her, and I'm not blaming her.
Or Mercedes Lewis, though, because he's the one. Like,
I'm also not calling anybody a liar.
I'm
just making the point that Shane Waldron was the offensive coordinator in Seattle for 3 years before he was here. And so, did he spend those whole 3 years not having a first 15 play? It just doesn't make any sense.
I'm sure he had a scripted play. I mean, we'd have to find this out, but I'm sure he had scripted plays for whatever reason. Maybe he didn't do it with this quarterback right off the bat. Chris?
I just think it's a reflex in Chicago to put the blame on an OC. Like you said, a quarterback's OC time together, the blame of this offense for year after year, different guys come in and same results. So I think it's just kind of a natural reflex to put the blame on Waldron for the entirety of this offense. We know what the issues were in those opening few weeks with, in particular, the offensive line struggles, the inability to really streamline and cater this scheme to the personnel that you had. And I feel like they've worked through it. I know it looks a lot rosier when you face the league's last-ranked defense and then on Sunday the league's 31st-ranked defense. But the point is they came together and I think had the sessions they needed to, those meetings at Hallis Hall to really understand this is what we need to do offensively to be successful. I think it really resonated and helped Shane Waldron along with the players, and I feel like they're on the same page now.
Yeah, just to be clear, guys, again, I don't think Stacey is wrong or being none of that. I think it's the communication is the problem. I think whether Mercedes Lewis got the communication properly or whether Walter got, or you know, the various things that were said. I've been through this 100 times myself. I've made 100 mistakes like this myself. It happens. But my point is, I don't believe that Shane Waldron didn't know he needed a first 15 place.
Explain to all of us then, why would it be egregious if he didn't do the first 15 scripted plays?
I don't know that it would be egregious, which is what some people are trying to make it. It would just be unusual, and it would be perceived as not being prepared in your job.
Or I guess what came to mind for me was, if the story is true, what came to mind here for me is that this is Shane Waldron trying something different, I suppose, thinking that that's the right thing to do with this quarterback and subsequently realizing it's not the right thing to do with the quarterback. What I thought was egregious, if we're going to do the hammering of Shane Waldron here, was having Caleb Williams throw the ball 52 times in the Indianapolis game and ran up some nice numbers. I mean, it was nice to see a Bears quarterback throw for 360 yards or whatever it was. But I think those are the more concrete errors that we have seen. And, Chris, I think to your point, he has adjusted. Since the Colts game, it feels like Matt Eberflus has adjusted because he had a bad day that day. Caleb Williams threw two interceptions that day. Shane Waldron had a bad day calling plays. Since then, things have changed.
Yeah, I think it's really important that next week at Hallis Hall, leading up to the Rams victory, where I think everybody from players to coaches top down realize, we can't sit there and say, you know, it's early in the season. It's okay. We're 1-2, but we got a chance to, we got a ton of football left. I like the fact that they felt the fire, that they felt the pressure to respond and understood there's little margin for error if you want to be a team that gets to the playoffs in this respect, a team that trying to rise up and get, you know, get to the postseason for the first time in a few years. And I like the fact that everybody that said there's an urgency. We got to get this right. Let's meet. Let's put our heads together. Let's get on the same page and respond. And in particular on offense, you're right. You can't be throwing the ball 50-plus times to the rookie quarterback in that spot. They needed to strike that balance. Like, Shane Waldron's been asked over and over again, what's the identity of this offense? And he'll talk about marrying the run game with the pass game and having those two aspects complement each other. You've seen that now the last 2 weeks. You've seen Waldron make the necessary adjustments, the players understanding what they need to do and how to get through to Waldron to the same respect. And this offense is starting to come together. Again, bad defenses, right? But it's still the NFL. These are still NFL players you're going up against. And I think it's really important what they've been able to do these last couple of games offensively. And now you got a chance to build on that. You're facing a weak defense in Jacksonville. You head into the bye week, ideally with a win under your belt at 4-2 and feeling really good about the growth of this offense.
You know, guys, honestly, I wasn't thrilled with the hiring of Shane Waldron as the offensive coordinator when they did it, because I went back and looked, and there was a lot of quality offensive minds available. His 3 years in Seattle certainly should have taught him how to do the job, but he didn't do that. I mean, I just didn't understand why he was the pick of the guys that they had to pick from. Obviously, there was something that either Flus or Ryan, well, you know, or both of them felt good about and may still feel good about. But the other thing you have to realize with Waldron is, much like Caleb Williams, much like everybody else on this roster, there aren't many teams in the league that had as many changes to their roster this year as the Bears did, or significant changes. All of them have to be entered into the system now. All of them have to learn the new system. All of them have to learn to play together. It's not just Caleb Williams who needs 2, 3, 4 weeks. It's the entire roster and the coaching staff. And I think any, you know, evaluation of these coaches as far as this is what you got, keep them or get rid of them, it's still too soon for that. At least a few more weeks. As we've seen these improvements now from week to week the last couple weeks, we'll know more about where they're at in a couple more weeks. And at some point, there aren't going to be any more excuses. But I still think there has to be a little more time to get to know these guys better as coaches.
Yeah, it felt like they were so set in this offensive hiring process of keeping continuity in personnel and scheme while also finding a different play caller. And I've not seen anything decisive that says Shane Waldron is a much better play caller than Luke Getsy. I think it's important they kept the same kind of style, because you've spent 2+ years now, 3 off-seasons with Ryan Poles, establishing personnel on offense to fit this kind of outside zone scheme. But I want to see more from this offense. I want to see more from Shane Waldron. And look, there's a lot of days we sat out there at practice, the three of us and our entire group, and saying, man, this offense looks rough. It's disjointed. This offensive line's struggling. Quarterback doesn't have a chance back there. The running backs can't get going. Like, This all carried into the season. This is what we were expecting early on. I think the biggest victory of this all is that the quarterback, Caleb Williams, looks very good, and he's continued to progress. He's made steps week after week, and that's an important part of this. And through this all, guys, they're 3-2 right now. Like, this is exactly where I expected them to be through 5 weeks. I think you guys are probably similar to that, right? It's like they're where they're supposed to be right now. It was choppy early on, but they figure things out. You steal a game against the Titans when you're down 17-0. You have a chance in Houston. You have a chance in Indy. And then you stack a couple wins under your belt. You get to 4-2 to the bye week, and you're feeling really dang good.
It was like the Bears alarm was going off as it like
the
early
bear raid
in the
siren.
Yes, the fair raid. I mean,
like, sounded across Chicago.
It's true, and I get it. Like, even the win over Tennessee, like that. You had Will Levis doing something really stupid to bail the Bears out at the end. Caleb Williams only threw for 93 yards in that game. It's since the Indianapolis game that they have gotten things right. And even in the Rams game, it still didn't look offensively the way we all want it to look with the explosive plays. But that did come against Carolina, as bad as that Panthers team is. That's the way we want it to look. So I guess the ironic part about this is we all go in on Shane Waldron and try to do it as delicately as we possibly can. He's listening. And he's adjusting. So he's not one of these, like, he's not doing the Matt Nagy thing where Nagy was just stubborn until he had no choice but to give up the play calling. But he had to be hit over the head with it. At least Waldron is willing to play ball and adjust.
He seems like a wonderful guy from our brief interactions with him. He seems very happy, easygoing. I think the players had to instill in him, get on us a little bit more. Like, that's one thing you heard. And the direction of that was that get on the quarterback a little bit more, get on the offense, whoever needed to get on, like start getting on us a little bit harder. I think that was something that he needed to adjust. But look, this thing's going to be a work in progress. The beauty of the schedule, as we've talked about, is you've had easy competition early on. You're building up towards these more difficult games, and ultimately that stretch of 6 of 8 division games in the final home stretch. And the beauty of that is this team should be getting better and better throughout, and in particular the quarterback, the OC adapting to his personnel. You'd like to think that come November into December, this team, this offense is really going to be clicking, and you do have a legitimate chance to be a postseason team and potentially win a game in January. So we're getting ahead of ourselves, but that's just kind of the stair-step climb for this team, and I'm encouraged by what I've seen so far.
Right at this very moment, as we are all talking here, the Bears are in a good place,
yeah.
And we'll see if it continues, and we'll continue to see if it looks right. Because as I said in the opening set, it's got to look right as well for it to be sustainable and for the Bears to actually win playoff games. Chris, I know that you have to leave us to go back down the hallway to do an update on WBBM, but do you have a pick that you'd like to share? I don't know if you've done it yet publicly. If you haven't, that's okay. I don't want to ruin anything, but do you have a pick for the Bears Jaguars, or as people like to say, Jaguars?
You can check it at 670thescore.com with all of our stat picks, and I'm saying that because I forget what I had. I think it was 27-13. I can't quite remember at this point, but I have a Bears win by double digits. I see them winning decisively against the Jaguars. I think they're the best. What was it, 31? I don't know. I have them winning big. I have them getting a solid.
Okay.
Check out 670thescore.com. That's your tease. And yeah, you can catch me on 105.9 WBBM.
Dan, follow him right now.
Right
at
now.
CMA Sports, is it? Or Score? 670. At CMA 670.
You're the sports one. Oh, you're at Grody Sports. Don't get this mixed
did
up.
Did I just conflate my... Because my Twitter is different. I'm rebuilding. Remember, I lost at Mark Grody Sports, RIP. It's still there. It's like a ghost on Twitter, just sitting there with all those followers. I don't know where they've all gone.
Yeah, there's other Mark Grody's out there, too. They're all confused. They're getting the wrath. Whenever you see something they don't like, people are going at all the other Mark Grody's, especially at Mark Grody Sports. That guy's just kind of out there.
Oh.
There's a lot going on in the Grody Twitter sphere.
It's going to happen. Someday I will get at Mark Grody Sports back, and you guys are all in trouble because the power will be there. Elon Musk, I've been trying to get a hold of him. Very difficult man to get a hold of is
so
Elon
much
Musk.
For that.
Emma, get out of here, man. Thanks for coming in here with us. We appreciate you.
Take care, guys.
Yep, that is Chris Emma exiting right now. I'm Mark Grody. He is Hub Arkish. We will talk more Bears in a few minutes right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Mark Grody and Hub Arkish on 670 The Score.
With you until 9 o'clock tonight, welcoming your phone calls and text messages. We see you. 312-644-6767 is the number. go to Mike in Rochelle. Oops. Oops.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Hub.
Hi, Mike.
Nice to talk to you guys.
Morning, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, I think the whole concept of being upset that someone, whether they are or not, but isn't scripting plays to start a game is ridiculous. I don't know why some people think it's a requirement. You know, my concern is effective. You know, is the offense effective? Are we scoring more than others? And we clearly, with a rookie quarterback and two new receivers, one that's a rookie, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, and you know, it's going to take time to fully gel. We've got an offensive line, and obviously it's a work in progress. But the one thing I was happy to see was using your battering ram in Roschon Johnson down on the goal line versus trying to get tricky, which I thought was something that Matt Nagy really hurt himself and the Bears, always trying to outsmart everybody when sometimes it's just your guys blocking better than the other guys and using a little power. I mean, I'm not talking about 20 yards out, but 5 yards and in, I think some of the traditional approach is really important. And so I was happy to see them go to that, especially in the last game. I know there was a fourth down that they went for that they didn't get, but I was really pleased to see it. You know, my real concern with the Bears right now is the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's absurd that they think somebody has to script plays. I'm thinking back, and I'm thinking it was Bill Walsh who maybe was the first to really do that or at least be known for it. But I don't see that as a necessity if, you know, who knows what the defense is going to come out with it. They're going to give them a different look that they didn't see. Now, I think you have to be flexible. You have to know your guys and know your capacity and call the offense accordingly.
Mike, it's a good call, and thank you for it. In theory, I do understand what you're saying. Like, why do you have to script plays? But they have, if the report is spot on accurate, they are now doing scripted plays, and that's probably because maybe Caleb Williams was more comfortable with that. So I think that part of it is that the Bears have noted just how talented Caleb Williams is, how smart Caleb Williams is. So they have put a ton on his plate. They have put more on his plate, I think, than the average rookie coming into the league, including maybe doing things a little bit differently and initially not scripting plays. And I think the Bears have realized that, as great as they probably still think Caleb Williams is going to be, that maybe they need to not think so far outside of the box. And they did start to get that together against the Rams when they did the underneath passes and then open it up against Carolina. So that's what I think about the scripted plays. A couple more things, Hub, and then I'll let you jump in here too. Yeah, I really like that finally the Bears are figuring out the identity of their running backs. Finally, we are seeing Swift do what I think we've seen Swift do throughout his career, and that is to be a weapon as a receiver and as a running back. And Roschon Johnson, to me, is perfect as a goal line guy because I've always thought that he was a little bit reckless, or is a little reckless in the way he runs, a little bit upright, loves to make contact. And that contact part is what is so good for him down on the goal line. And then Hub, of course, yeah, we've been talking about the offensive line all year long. It's still, as even though it's getting better and they are adjusting, it's still a work in progress.
Yeah, I think everything you say makes perfect sense. There is one thing now I'm going to have to disagree with you on, though, is the fact that I don't think either of those guys are the Bears' best running back. Khalil Herbert is the best ball carrier in the Bears' running back room. Now, he can't block, and he's not a good receiver, and I understand why he's not your number one back. I understand adding DeAndre Swift, but Khalil Herbert's got to get the ball more because he is their most dangerous guy with the ball in his hands once he's got it coming out of the backfield. And I think he's shown that the last couple of years. He led the league in average yards per carry last year at 5.7 yards per carry. And that he's not even getting on the field anymore. And he is not, there's no problem mentally. There's no complaints with him.
No.
You know, as a
good,
team
good
member.
Guy, and good citizen, all that. Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Somehow, some way, last year, he fell out of favor with the Bears towards the end. Like that
well, he
regime.
Had the injury and he missed some time.
Yeah,
and
he did. So but they, obviously, they paid for a running back. They mm-hmm. told you by signing DeAndre Swift to the contract that they did that they had lost faith. And the only, I mean, because I try to think about this too. I think he, as he said, not a great blocker, not prolific in the passing game, which Swift is a better receiver. And also, there were a lot of times, I think they wanted a little more speed, because there were a decent amount of times where, and Khalil Herbert hated it, and he would make it known in the locker room, he got caught from behind a decent amount of time. So my guess is that they wanted a home, or a guy in theory again, that could be a home run hitter. And that's what DeAndre Swift is capable of doing. I'm not saying like DeAndre Swift is some Hall of Famer by any means, or even a great running back, but he does have the home run hitting power, unlike Khalil Herbert.
You know, I'm guessing that most Bears fans don't realize that in his sixth year in the league, Swift, he only has 1,000-yard rushing season. I mean, his first 4 years, he didn't get 1,000. And that was surprising, you know, because he has shown these signs. And he did have a very good year last year. You know, there's no question about that. And as a matter of fact, the Bears paid less for him than what the Lions paid to take away the Bears running back. You know, so it's not like they overpaid that badly. $24 million is a nice deal for 3 years. And I don't want less from Swift. I don't want less from Johnson. I don't understand why they're not using Herbert more, because I think he is one of the more effective weapons they have if they use him right.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Like, it's been so little that it does make you wonder. Like, I've been okay with the Swift signing, and maybe I am not as high on Khalil Herbert as you are, mm-hmm. but the tiny amount that they use him is a bit baffling. We need to take a break, and we're going to take, if you'll allow us to, we're going to take a quick break from the Bears. When we come back, Tom Ricketts sent out a letter to Cubs fans that we will read to you and react with you. So we are going to talk Cubs baseball.
The owner screwed up yesterday.
Oh!
I'm not saving anything on this one.
All right. There it is. And I can't wait to hear what, because Hub's kind of been huffing and puffing since he got here. Actually, before he got here on the text chain, he's like, we got to talk about this Cubs thing. So we will talk about the Cubs next. And at 7, we won't veer from the Bears for too long, because at 7:20, we're going to go to Jacksonville and bring in our friend Mia O'Brien, who'll tell us all about what the Bears are facing in London and the Jaguars. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Just be cool. Everyone be cool.